Scott joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hello, sir.
Hey, Scotty.
What's going on, guys?
Way too much stuff for a team that was supposed to be a little bit better than it's playing right now. How about that? Let's start with this. Can I throw this one at you?
Sure.
I'm so impressed with what they do at the start of the game offensively. Three of their six touchdowns offensively have come on the first possession, which means the Browns have gone good chunks of four games and put up only three touchdowns after their first touch. The heck's that all about?
Yeah, that's pretty pretty startling numbers there.
It sure is.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kevin Stefanski is one of the best at scripting those plays, and the guys practice them, and they know what they're going to do, and they work, and then things change, the defense adjusts. I think you need your quarterback to make plays after that. I think, you know, they bring blitzes, so your line's got to figure out the blitzes. You know, your receivers have to adjust to the coverage, and I think that's probably at the heart of it. And then, you know, there's plays to be made that they're not making. And that's up and down the roster. I mean, obviously the Amari Cooper interception off his chest. Deshaun Watson played fine, but I also studied guys open that he either didn't throw to or that he missed. They get the big play called back by a penalty. They thought they had a touchdown at the end of the first half or would have had a touchdown, and DeJuan Jones blocks the wrong guy, leaves the guy coming off the edge free. Watson has to hurry, and he misses. Amari Cooper is running down the right side wide open. And Watson goes, we all knew it was a touchdown. And they've been trying to beat the blitz because they've struggled to block it. But they know that if they can pick it up, big plays are there. And that's what they spent the week doing. And they get their opportunity, and DeJuan Jones just misses his assignment, and it costs him a touchdown. And when you lose games by 4 points and 5 points or 6 points last week, one play makes a huge difference, and we're just seeing that from a whole bunch of players. And I feel like, to get back to your point, Jeff, is in the scripted plays, you can remove a lot of those variables, as many as you can. And once the game gets going, it's harder for Kevin Stefanski to remove those variables.
Is it possible, because I heard this yesterday, that they are a talented, team? No, they have a talented roster, but they're a bad football team.
Yeah, I think that's 100% true.
Yeah.
And I think the expectations make this more difficult, and especially for the fans. I think expectations in anything, right? You think you're going to go shoot 75 on the golf course, you'd shoot 85, and you're upset, when if you thought you're going to shoot 90, you'd be happy. And if you're going to a season thinking, hey, this team is coming off a playoff season, they've got everybody back, they made some additions, blah, 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 I think as a fan, it was fair to expect the Browns to be much better than they have been. The softest part of their schedule was the early part of the schedule, and they haven't taken advantage at all. So I think that makes it more difficult for fans. I think it makes it more difficult for ownership because they have high expectations. And then to watch this, it's probably the same in the locker room. Those guys think they're really good. They think they have a defense capable of being the best in the league, and it's not playing like it. Deshaun Watson keeps, you know, he's said before he still thinks he's elite. Well, he's not playing elite. I'm sure Amari Cooper expects to catch balls, and he's not. Right, so all those things make this 1-3 start, I think, that much harder for everyone to deal with.
Scott Patrick joining us, BrownsZone.com, where you can read all of Scott's work, great coverage of the Browns. I've talked about for some time, I just don't think there's enough skill position talent to be impactful, Scott, especially with Nick Chubb and David Njoku out right now. That said, what can they do about that? Because I think it's tough to judge the offense right now based on the Njoku and Chubb being out, although you can't count on Nick because, you know, that's a serious knee injury. And with all the issues on the offensive line, I'd love to say it's all on fill in the blank or this is the problem or that it's all offensive line. I just think that makes it such a gray area that it's tough to get a gauge on exactly what needs fixed, or am I missing the boat on that?
No, I think that's fair, and I also think it makes it difficult to evaluate Deshaun Watson properly because I think there's flaws there, and I think we see those flaws on a weekly basis. We also see him not getting any help, and whether that's protection, whether it's Amari Cooper, whether it's whatever, a holding penalty calls back a touchdown. I think it makes it hard to evaluate him and everything going on. But your point about the skill position guys, I think you're right to a degree, Jeff. And, you know, I think Jerome Ford is a fine player. He's not Nick Chubb. I don't know if he scares anybody. I think he plays really hard. I think he's been a spark in the second half the last 2 weeks.
And certainly but, competent, Scott.
Yeah, right. But it feels like there's a ceiling to him. We haven't seen Elijah Moore do much at all. We haven't seen Cedric Tillman do anything except drop a fourth down pass against the Giants.
Yeah.
So I get your point. I also, and I don't want to make everything about Deshaun Watson, but I also think you have a quarterback who's supposed to make all these other guys better. And that's why you're paying him a bunch of money. That's why you went and got him. And he's not able to do that. And it's not all his fault. But I think when we focus on the third and fourth receiver not being good enough, I think part of that is a quarterback discussion.
I'd agree. Yep. I'd
How much of it is a coaching discussion?
I don't think it is. And
I mean, because I'm hearing, you know, Andy Dickerson getting ripped left and right. Oh. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't coach offensive linemen, and I don't see Andy out there trying to make a block. And is this a, you know.
And they had one guy out there at the end of the game who was supposed to be a starter, Joel Bitonio.
And is there a, you know, is there a psychological thing going on here with the transition of offensive line coaches? I don't know enough on the outside to make that decision to start sitting here and rip an offensive line coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's competent and capable. Is there a drop-off from Bill Callahan? I would say sure. And I think there would be for a high percentage of teams in this league if he lost Bill Callahan. And I think that did show up when the Browns were struggling to pick up blitzes. I think there's a correlation there because Bill Callahan was so involved in that aspect of the game planning. And he was so detail-oriented that his guys were good at that. But you also have injuries you're dealing with up front. You have age. Guys getting older up front. So I think all that's a factor. I don't think, you know, I don't think blaming Andy Dickerson. I don't think he's the guy responsible for a 1-3 start. You know, you look at, and I think Jim Schwartz is a really good defensive coordinator. His guys, and it's hard. It's you know, kind of similar to the Deshaun Watson discussion, but like the defense hasn't been awful. And it gave him, you know, scored a touchdown yesterday, and it gave him a chance by getting stops in the second half. It also hasn't been great, and they don't have an interception yet, and they're not forcing enough turnovers, you know, even though they had the fumble yesterday for the touchdown. And they're giving up 2 or 3 touchdowns a game, which with this offense can seem insurmountable when you give up those and you give them up early. So, you know, I don't think necessarily it's Jim Schwartz's fault, but guys miss tackles. It's his unit, right? So I do think there's plenty of blame to go around, and I think it covers the coaches. I think it covers the roster. You know, and I don't, but I don't think like Kevin Stefanski's play calling. I know a lot of people like to pick on that. I don't think that's the problem. I really don't, from an offensive standpoint. I think there's all kinds of other issues going on. I don't think the play calling is a problem.
Scott Petrax joining us from the Chronicle Telegram, brownzone.com, where you can read all of Scott's work. The way this team has played so far on offense is it's challenging at the very least. Is Watson capable of being what he was, Scott, or has that ship sailed?
I would never just rule it out, but it feels to me that ship has sailed. I don't know what, if I had to recast his ceiling, it feels more like 12th in the league than top five, which in 2020, I thought he was a top five quarterback in the league. I think that's what the Browns thought they were getting when they traded for him. I don't know what's changed, you know, mentally, physically. I don't have those answers. I can speculate on a bunch of stuff. We all know what has gone on with him over the last 3 or 4 years. But he doesn't seem to be the same guy to me. He doesn't seem comfortable in the pocket. And, you know, I'm sure part of that is when you get the snot kicked out of you, you're looking to get away. But he's looking to get away. And that's not a great way to play quarterback. It really affects the offensive line. We see that hold on Nick Harris. And the reason it's a hold, and we can argue whether or not it's the right call, is because when Watson scrambles so much and the linemen, the defensive linemen go to get him, it puts the offensive lineman in a terrible spot because it looks like they're hanging onto the jersey when the guy pulls away. And that's why we see more penalties on the Browns, because Watson is always trying to get out of the pocket. Now, some of the times he has to. Some of it he doesn't. we saw a bunch of checkdowns yesterday. And I think part of that is get the ball out of my hand because you don't want to take the sacks. You don't want to take the hits. And sure, those completions are good, but it felt like too much to me that he was just trying to get it out of his hand without looking downfield to make a play. And then, you know, there's a whole bunch of plays leading up to it. But on the last play of the game, the last meaningful play of the game, he's got, it looked to me, Jordan Akins running open in the left corner. And I asked Akins, and he said the defensive back is kind of looking toward the sideline, and he got a free release. And Watson had time to get it there. And I don't know if it was his first read or not. So, I'm not putting all the blame on Watson. But there's a chance to make a play to win the game. And that's what you pay a quarterback for. That's what the elite quarterbacks do. To have a bad game for 58 minutes, you make a couple plays at the end. And he was in position to make a play, and he didn't do it, and he double-clutched, and then he takes a sack. And you need him to be better. When other things aren't working, you need your quarterback to be better and raise everyone. And he just isn't that good right now, or isn't good enough to do that on a consistent basis, which makes me think he probably will never get to that level again.
Scott, when they brought in Ken Dorsey to replace Alex Van Pelt, and what we're seeing right now, and I talked last week, I mentioned already today, about how they're not running the ball, even though they do it a little bit more effectively than they do passing the ball, because they're passing a lot and not doing it very well. Yeah. Are they trying to force feed an offense that they think Deshaun Watson will thrive in at the expense of abandoning what they might do better and be more successful as an overall offense?
Yeah, I think you could say yes to that. I think there's factors involved that if you really believe in that this offense is the best for Deshaun Watson, then you have to give it a chance, and you can't give up after 4 weeks.
That makes perfect sense.
Right, yeah. You have to stick with it, and you hope that things click. The other part of that is I don't think that the way they're built right now that they're an elite running team. I know they're probably running it a little better than they're throwing it, but we talked about Jerome Ford. Dante Foreman, you know, when they go with that jumbo, it worked a little bit in Jacksonville, but not much. And it didn't work, I felt like, at all yesterday when they tried to go like three tight ends and Dante Foreman. They're just not moving the line like they used to. Kareem Hunt would put his head down and get four or five. It doesn't seem like Foreman's doing that. So I think there's issues in the run game as well that if you're the coaches, you go, well, it's not like that's working like gangbusters. So let's stick to what we think is the right thing to do for Watson and for this offense long term. Now, it has to work eventually, and to this point it hasn't, but I think that's their thinking.
Scott, the trade deadline is, what, 5 weeks away? It's November 5th. At what point do you decide maybe I will trade guys, and could Amari Cooper be there?
Yeah, I think we're premature there. Bad's probably a little strong, but as many struggles as Amari Cooper's had this year, I mean, he's clearly their number one receiver. And unless you're going fire sale, you know, you can't trade him right now, right? That's just giving up on the season. So maybe 5 weeks from now, you know, it's a different story and they know they're not going to playoffs. And then you trade him and try to get anything for him. But if you win a couple, then maybe you go out and try to find, you know, an addition to that receiver room. Or if your offensive line is still beat up, you find an offensive lineman, right? If you figure out some way to win a few games between now and then. But, you know Andrew Berry, he likes to trade. And I think right now it could go either way. But, yeah, I wouldn't be stunned if things continue in this direction if you see some guys dealt. And maybe it's Jed Wills. You know, he's in the last year of his contract. Teams need tackles. If he's healthy by then, and if you're Andrew Berry and you decide you're not going to sign him to an extension, then I bet you could get something for Jed Wills out there.
Scott Petrak's joining us, Chronicle Telegram, brownzone.com. The AFC North is starting to look like a division where you better get your act together quickly, or Pittsburgh maybe even, but Baltimore certainly looks like it is a team that could pull away here, Scott.
Isn't it crazy how things changed in a week or two? You know, I mean, the Baltimore lost at home in the fourth quarter of the Raiders 2 weeks ago, and it looked like the division was, you know, you had Pittsburgh
wide open
and nobody really believed in them. And, you know, now it's, oh, man, you can get two teams in the playoffs, and the Bengals look good. You know, I mean, I know it's the Panthers, but they still got to win, and they're scoring some points. So it's a crazy league. Baltimore, I thought, would take a step back, and maybe their step back was the first couple of weeks, and now they're back to form. I didn't believe Derrick Henry still had much in the tank, and I could be totally wrong. And if I'm totally wrong, then they're going to be in the thing to the end. So, yeah, you're going to have to win some games. Now, you know, 10 wins, with 10 wins, win the division, who knows? But that was an impressive win. I didn't see much of it, but just seeing the score and what Derrick Henry did against that Buffalo team, that's pretty impressive. And it looks like, especially given Cincinnati's struggles, that Baltimore is the class of this division still.
Mm. Explain the Nick Chubb story to everybody, and where are we with this? And yep. You know, probably Wednesday makes more sense to pull him off the IR because it extends out that 21 days. So tell me, where are we with Nick Chubb?
Yeah, he's on the PUP list. So, you know, and the terminology is funky. So I don't think they actually activate him from the PUP list, but you open this 21-day window. And I would expect them to do, I've been told they expect to do it Wednesday. And then he can begin practicing. So you get 21 days for him to practice, and then you decide to activate him to the 53-man roster or keep him on PUP for the rest of the year, and then he can't play anymore. So, you know, if they're going to do it, they don't have to do it right now. They can do it this week, and they're expected to do it this week. But if he wasn't ready, they could push it down the road. So it's a really good sign. I think it'll take a while before he gets back to a game. I don't think it'll be Sunday. You know, the guy hasn't practiced in more than a year. But it's encouraging. I'm looking forward to see him on the field. I've seen him run. I've seen him cut. But I haven't seen him do football things. And, you know, for a team looking for anything they can get, I think just him being on the field will be some kind of energy boost for this team.
Scott, as great as he is, and I think he's one of the best running backs I've ever seen, and I'm just so apprehensive to put a guy back on the field this quickly after a second devastating injury. And I that's strictly in my head. The medical people won't let him play unless he's okay to go. But, man, it just seems like a stretch to me.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, Jeff. You know, I think to me it's, is he ever going to be the same player? And
yeah,
we're not going to know that. But I don't know if, you know, another 6 weeks or 6 months, I don't know if that changes that. I think if the medical people say you're fine and you can run and cut and do those things, and, you know, Nick Chubb knows how his knee feels, I think you have to try it. That doesn't mean it's going to be successful. You know, we've seen, and, you know, this is going to sound negative, but we've seen guys try to come back from major injuries. I'm having a flashback to Gary Baxter. If you guys remember, blew up both his patellars.
Yeah.
And then it was like a story forever, and he kept trying to come back. He just can't do it. But there gets to a point where you have to try on the field. And I don't think Nick is in the same spot because he's on schedule. It always felt like October to me when he'd come back, and that looks like that's when it's going to be, barring a setback. So I think it's positive that he is, but I get your point, Jeff. And I think there's certainly still questions about Nick and his recovery and how it'll look when he's actually playing.
Go to brownzone.com. You can read all of Scott's work, his story on the game yesterday. Outstanding. Scott, thank you very much, buddy.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, guys.